Okay, yes. So our topic has a general title like an overview of the history of our man's genealogy, which we recite every day, three times, inshallah. Just for 49, that would not be the correct way to do it. So first, I want to set up a background, okay? Because I realize that you are not all Islamics or experts, or you have not had the chance to read Ismaili history in depth. So first and foremost, we should look at what happens before Maulana Ali, right? I know we are all quite happy that Maulana Shah Karim will appoint his successor and the line continues, right? And the line continues because that is the strong message of the Holy Quran as well. And I will mention that in a minute. But let us go back to what happened before Maulana Ali, right? Because this is a weak point in the Jamaat. They think that Maulana Ali is our first imam. You know, I got into trouble when I was at the Tariqa board. I delivered a verse in which I said that there were imam before Maulana Ali. People complained to the chairman. He called me and he said to me, you mustn't say things like that, right? So, what has happened before Maulana Ali? Maulana Ali is definitely the first imam of the cycle of Prophet Muhammad. No doubt about it. But there is a condition there, isn't there? Of the cycle of Prophet Muhammad. So what we are saying then is that every great prophet cycle had imams, going all the way back to Adam, Hazrat Adam. So that is the first clear message which must be in our minds, right? That, you know, I think people find it difficult to remember these 49 names. If you were to add all the names of the previous cycles, I don't think our Jamaat would be able to handle that. And time-wise, it would make a great difference as well. So we have to understand that there are some certain principles of faith, okay? Very important principles in religion. So what is the Ismaili belief? The Ismaili belief throughout, from the writings of our great da'is and peers and hujjahs, we know that God's faith, the Deen-e-Islam, which is also called the Deen-e-Fitra, the religion of nature, is not haphazard. It is very systematic. It follows certain rules, eternal principles. It's not haphazard. No? And so, the Ismailis have this very important way of thinking now, and they always have had it, which is that Imamat is a continuous, a permanent, and eternal institution. Imamat. Nubuwwah, on the other hand, is not a permanent institution. So you have six great prophets who are called the Natiqs, six great prophets, and then the final prophet of this major cycle, it is called the major cycle because it covers 7,000 years. The final prophet is called the Khatam al-Anbiya or Nabiyyin, the seal of prophethood. That's the title of Nabi Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Why was he called the final prophet? Because he brings the cycles, plural, of Nubuwwah to an end. So we have Hazrat Adam, Hazrat Nuh, Hazrat Ibrahim, Hazrat Musa, Hazrat Isa, and Hazrat Nabi Muhammad Mustafa. May peace be upon all of them, right? Six great natiqs. And this is the meaning, the esoteric meaning, the spiritual, the batin meaning of where it says in the Quran, that God created creation in 6 days. And on the seventh day, which is called Yom El-Akhir, by the way, Yom El-Akhir, this is the day on which God established himself on the throne. This is in the Quran. And those people who are exoteric, they take this literally. They think God created the physical world in 6 days. And then, of course, the scientists all laugh at them and say, are you crazy? We have found skulls of human beings which are millions of years old. So we are not talking about creation of the physical world. If you have read chapter of the memoirs or studied it, you will know that according to Islam, creation is a perpetual and a constant event. It doesn't have a beginning or an end. So in this ayat of the 6 days and the seventh day, God is not talking about the physical world. He's talking about the world of religion, that he has established the world of religion with six great prophetic cycles, and the seventh cycle is called the cycle of Hazrat Qa'imul Qiyamah. Okay? And in each of these cycles, the Natiq, who is the father, he is the father figure, he is the paternal aspect, he is always accompanied by the Asas. Yes? So we have looked at this as well. So again, maybe a bit of revision is never bad. Hazrat Adam, to begin with, had as his Asas, his son, Hazrat Habil. But Hazrat Habil was martyred by his own brother out of jealousy. So then the Asas became Hazrat Shis. Hazrat Nuh had Hazrat Sam. Hazrat Ibrahim had Hazrat Ismail. I emphasize that because I'm going to bring up a point there. Hazrat Musa had Hazrat Harun. Hazrat Isa had Hazrat Shamun Safa in Arabic, or Peter the Simon in English. And Hazrat Nabi Muhammad Mustafa had as his asas Maulana Murtaza Ali. And the asas is the symbol of the maternal aspect. Maternal. The Natiq, the prophet, is the father, and the asas plays the role of the spiritual mother. Because without a spiritual father and a spiritual mother, there can be no spiritual creation. Just like in the physical world, you see, that's the religion of nature. Islam is based on nature. Without a physical father and a physical mother, there cannot be procreation physically. So simple to understand. So Maulana Ali is the asas. So in a way, if you read Ismaili literature of the Fatimid times and earlier, you will see that Maulana Ali is not referred to as Imam. He's referred always as Asas. In which case, the first Imam would actually be Maulana Hassan. One way of counting would be to make Maulana Hassan of the Panchthan Park as our first Imam. But Maulana Hassan was an Imam and Mustawda. He was only an entrusted Imam. His children were not going to be the Imam. The permanent Imam, the Mustaqar Imam, is Maulana Hussein. And you can see then, this continuity was expressed in that Gujarati dua, which I've sent out to all of you through Rosemary. That in the old dua, the genealogy started with Wachan Abu Talib Wali, Haq Maulana Ali. So who was this Abu Talib? And Hazrat Abu Talib was the father of Hazrat Ali. You see, father to son. He was the father of Hazrat Ali. And he was the last Imam of the cycle of Hazrat Isa. And Hazrat Abu Talib also has this great, great honor that he is the one who prepared Nabi Muhammad Mustafa, his own cousin, not cousin, I've used the word cousin in an English sense, I beg your pardon. Hazrat Abu Talib, whose real name was Imran, Hazrat Abu Talib and Hazrat Abdullah were brothers. And Prophet Muhammad was the son of Hazrat Abdullah, and Hazrat Ali is the son of Hazrat Abu Talib. So, Hazrat Abu Talib was the one who prepared Prophet Muhammad to become the next prophet. These are all esoteric secrets, if you like, treasures. It is Maulana Abu Talib who gave the Ism-e-Azam to Prophet Muhammad to practice Ibadah. And he wouldn't do that if he wasn't the Imam himself or that time. Right? Whereas if you look at the exoteric people, the majority of the Ummah, they all say, including the film, The Message, they all say that Maulana Abu Talib did not say La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah up to his dying breath. Such nonsense. Okay? So, what I'm saying to you is that please, you must understand and you must try to make the Jamaat understand that there were Imams before Maulana Ali. In fact, the way I have described it now, you can see that Maulana Ali had two appointments. You know, biologically speaking, because he was the son of the previous Imam, so for his Imamat was coming directly from his father, Maulana Abu Talib, as well as through appointment by the final Natiq, Nabi Muhammad Mustafa. He had a double appointment. Isn't that amazing? So please have this very clearly in your mind, historically speaking, right? So now let us look at some other things which you know, I have discussed with some of you, if not all of you. Is that look at this ayat, which is such a favorite of the Ismailis. The ayat of Nur, yes? Ayat al-Nur, also called ayat al-Misbah. Allahu Nur samawati wal ard masalu nurihi kamishkatin fiha misbahu. Yes, that ayat, the one which is recited on, you know, it was recited on every great occasion during the Diamond Jubilee, during the Golden Jubilee, on most of the most important occasions like Taknashini, opening of Ismaili centers, you name it. It's always the ayat of Misbah. Why? The ayat of Nur. Because it tells you that this light kindles without any fire touching it. No fire touches it. If some of you have a Quran in front of you, go to Surah 24, ayat 35. Very important to have these things in front of you so that, you know, you can make it makes a deeper impression on your mind. Surah 24, ayat 35. Allah is the light of the heavens and the earth. The similitude of his light is as a niche wherein is a lamp. The lamp is in a glass. The glass is as if it were a glittering star. This lamp is it is kindled from a blessed tree, an olive, neither of the east nor of the west, whose oil would glow forth, though no fire touched it. Wallav lam tamsassu nar. Nar is in Arabic fire. And it says clearly that this lamp is glowing, giving out light, but no fire has touched it. So it's not a physical light. It's a different light. And it has no beginning, because if the fire had kindled it, then it would have a beginning. And anything which has a beginning must have an end. So no fire has touched it, means it has no beginning. And then in the next sentence it says, light upon light. So there again, where do you start light upon light? Light upon 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 light. You work it out yourselves, okay? Don't just listen to things. I'm so, you know, upset when people just listen to things and they don't think about it afterwards. The minute you hear light upon light, your mind should say, how can that be? How? Only if there's a light before it. And only if there is a light before it. And only if there is a light before it. How far are you going to go back? How far? That is the continuity of the light of Imamat. That's why I said Imamat is a permanent institution. Nubuwah, it is also the same divine light, but it is a temporary one according to God's own program. And that's why we Ismailis have a cyclical view. Cyclical view. The very first book that was published by the Institute of Ismaili Studies is a translation of Professor Henri Corbon's book, Cyclical Times and Ismaili Gnosis. It's well known all over the world that we Ismailis believe in cycles, continuity, no beginning, no end. And then there's another thing in this ayat of Nur, which is very interesting. And again, I have discussed it with some of you, but I'm sure you've forgotten. Why is it that God gives as the similitude of his light a small lamp? You know, God should compare his light to something like the blazing hot sun, shouldn't he? Even the sun can't compare with the light of God. So why does God choose a little lamp? And this lamp, think of the lamp in the time of the prophet, 1400 years ago, with a little flame, and it's being fed by oil. Because you light where there is no electricity, you light one lamp from another. Just as one imam teaches and brings up spiritually another imam. That's the beauty of this symbolism, that you light one lamp from a previous lamp. Isn't that beautiful? If only we had known these meanings during the diamond and the gold, then jubilee, it would have been very different. Our attitude in the didas might have been very different, huh? So, that again, and then, what does the Holy Quran say about this lamp? It says that many people will try to blow it out, because if there is a flame, you can blow it out. It's not a switch that you turn off. It's a little flame. But Allah says, He's not going to allow anybody to blow this light out. Even if they hate that. And in fact, He's going to perfect His light. And this is in two ayahs, Surah 9, ayah 32, Surah 61, ayat number 8. Twice in the Quran, same words. أَيُّرِدُونَ يُتْفِيُوا اللَّهِ بِأَفْوَاهِهِمْ This is the light we are talking about. Because once we start with the names, people will forget that we are actually talking about light. I don't want you to forget that. I want you to remember we are talking all the time about divine light. And my next point in this bit here is that, again, I have discussed this with some of you. Some of you are aware that during the Golden Jubilee, Maulana Hazrat Imam promised the Jamaat that they would have a global Nikah Nama. The two things sent out to the Jamaat after the Golden Jubilee, the Chirag-e Roshan Nama and the Nikah Nama. Both of those were done by Fakir when he was at the Institute. Both of them. And the Nikah Nama, he had looked at all the Nikah Namas from the entire Ismaili world, Africa, India, Pakistan, Syria, you name it, from all over the world. He had compared them. And then he had prepared a proper copy for the Ismailis according to the guidance of the Imam. And when it was ready, it went into the huzur of Hazir Imam. And Hazir Imam checked it. And he made a very significant change, which I don't think any more people in the Jamaat don't know about it, right? Including the ones who have been trained to recite the Nikah Nama, they don't know it. That Maulana Hazrat Imam, when he returned this copy, Dr. Hunzaif, he told me that Hazrat Imam, with his own Mubarak hand, had removed the name of Hazrat Sarah, who was the first wife of Hazrat Ibrahim. And instead, he had put in the name Hazrat Hajira, the mother of Maulana Ismail, the elder son. Because Maulana Ismail, the elder son, is where the direct permanent line comes from. So now the Ismaili Nikkanama is different from that of the other Muslims. They still talk of Hazrat Abraham and Hazrat Sarah. The Ismaili Nikkanama now mentions Hazrat Ibrahim with Hazrat Hajira. So that all these are like indications. Ishara hai, ishara. It is, they are alluding to the fact that the line of Imamat goes well beyond Maulana Ali. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving you this overview in a very different way from maybe what you would have expected, okay? Okay, so now this number 7, because that is that is a bone of contention actually. How many of you have, I wonder, you know, when you have the discussion afterwards, maybe you can tell me, how many of you have, you will know about it if you have read Dr. Hunza's article, A Living Branch of Islam, The Ismailis of Hunza, which was published in an Italian journal. It is on our Monoreality website in his file. Right? In it, he discusses this point, that because of our belief in the 7 major cycles, and not only that, the Ismailis also believe that within every one major cycle, then there are cycles of 7 imams. So, for instance, in the cycle of Nabi Muhammad Mustafa of 1,400 years, there have been 7 such cycles, right? That's why today we have the 49th imam. So we have major cycles and we have minor cycles, but they're always number 7, which is why number 7 is such an important symbol. So throughout the modern period and earlier, whenever Orientalists, you know, meaning Western scholars of Islam and the others who have written about Ismailis, they call us Sabia. The Ismailis are 7ers. But that's not so dangerous. When they say that we are 7ers, and then they talk about the Shia Ishnashi community, they call them 12ers, right? So now you can see 7ers and 12ers. The 7ers are less than 12ers. So it is used in a negative way against us, as though we only had 7 imams. So we have to be very, very aware of our own history. We are very proud to be 7ers. But we are 7ers not because we believe that Imamat ends after the 7th Imam. No, it continues just as the week of 7 days continues. You start the week on a Sunday, it finishes on a Saturday, another week starts on a Sunday, and carries on. That is our belief. Whereas those who have written against us have always tried to put us down by saying, oh, they only had 7 imams, but the others had 12. So be aware of these type of things because, like I said, I don't expect you to read history books on Islam that much, but at least our general knowledge should be deep enough to cover these points, yes? We are 7ers because we believe in cycles of 7 major cycles, within them 7 minor cycles, okay? But the cycles continue just as the week of a human society continues from Sunday to Saturday. And you can, okay. Now I come to another important point, which is a point of a conceptual point and a point of a fundamental belief. Okay, the names which we call the imams by, these, how do we understand these names? Right at the beginning of our dua sessions, I had pointed out to you all that if you look at the wording of Bismillahirrahmanirrahim and the letter B at the beginning means by, through, by means of, through the name of Allah. Then you have to ask yourself, why do we go to the name of Allah? Why don't you just say, by Allah? You know, the name Allah is there. Why do you have to say by the name of Allah, through the name of Allah? And I had explained to you that our great Fatimid Sayyidina Al-Mu'ayyad Fiddin Shirazi has written in his majalis, in his lectures, that we Ismailis believe that God has two types of names. He has names which are just made up of alphabetical letters like R, H, M, N, Rahman, Rahim, Hayy, Rabb, etc., etc. These are called verbal names. They are called names made up of letters. You can write them, you can check them out. If it's a blackboard, you can rub them off. If it is a screen of a computer, you can write them and delete them. No problem. Nothing will happen. But then, God also has another variety of names. And these, Sayyidina Al-Muyad in Arabic, has a very beautiful description. He says that these are Asma'ul, Asma'ul, Al-Asma'ul, Hayyatun, Natikatun, Akilatun, Sharifa. So in English, Al-Asma'u, the names which are Hayyatun, living. They are living. Not only are they living, they are Natikatun, they speak. The word Natik comes from the word Mut, to speak. Only rational beings speak, right? Animals don't speak. So, they are living, these names. They speak. They are with intellect, akilatun. And they are sharifa. They are highly honored. And if anybody tries to rub them out, to efface them, they incur the anger of God. And I'm sure that some of you are aware of the several ayahs in the Quran remember God by his beautiful names. In the Quran, they are called Al-Asma'ul Husna as well. Al-Asma'ul Husna, the beautiful name. So where does their beauty lie? Their beauty lies in the fact that they are living, speaking, guiding, and they have full of perfect intellect. I think one of those is 7180, isn't it? If you have the Quran there, because I can see Mutsabai has reached for his Quran, which is such a good habit. Yes? 7180, I think, yeah? Have a look. Yes. لِلَّهِ الْأَسْمَاءُ الْحُسْنَى فَدْعُهُ فِيهَا. Yes? Allah's are the favorites, most beautiful names, and call him by them. And leave the company of those who blaspheme his names. Leave the company of those who talk against his names. So that's one example there. 7180. So Asma'ul Husna, but the beauty lies in the fact that they are hayyatun, living, natikatun, speaking, akilatun, full of perfect intellect. And therefore they are sharifa, highly honored. And they are the ones that Allah is not going to allow anybody to blow out, to efface. They may try, but the line will continue. Very important point, very important point. Yes? And then one more point I'm going to add to this general principles before maybe doing a very quick historical thing, maybe, if you can, that you already heard me mention that the Noor is the same, but different Imams have different roles. So we have many different names. So Asas is, you know, the name of an Imam, because that is his role, that he should be the pair with the Natik. Right? And then I have mentioned the permanent imams, imam-e-mustaqar, imams whose progeny continue the imamah, like Maulana Hussein, like Maulana Ismail, the son of Hazrat Ibrahim. whereas Hazrat Ishaq was an Imam e Mustawda. That is, he was entrusted. He had the light of Imamah, but he is generally known as a prophet. And his progeny are also called prophets. They were entrusted Imams. And then, for instance, the last Imam of a cycle is called Imam e Muqeem, because he is the one who raises the resurrection by preparing the new prophet. Imam e Muqeem, M-U-Q-I-M. So these are all Ismaili technical terms, right? This is our epistemology, our technical language. And we should be aware, because, you know, you might come across it in an article or somewhere. And there's no need to get confused. Everything can be explained quite nicely. Okay? Okay. Now, having given you the fundamental information, which is very important, we will now quickly do what the title of this session was, that we are going to look at an overview of the history of our present genealogy, the 49 Imams from Maulana Ali to now. For that, I'm going to refer you to the memoirs chapter again. I think all of you will now have no doubt in your mind how much importance I give to this chapter. I really, really think that this chapter should be read again and again. It should be discussed again and again. And people should not be lazy about it. They should really, really concentrate on this chapter because it is very important. Okay. I'm going to read out one sentence from it, right? Because this is our history. And can I please point out to you that this is only two sentences which describes our entire history of 13 and a half centuries. 1350 years around. Only two sentences. Okay? What are these two sentences? So he's talking about how Maulana Agha Hasan Ali Shah came into Hind and Sindh, and how, at the request of the Qajar Emperor Muhammad, the British kept Maulana Agha Hasan Ali Shah in Calcutta. And when this emperor, Shahin Shah of Iran, passed away, then Hazrat Imam Agha Hasan Ali Shah came to Bombay. The year was 1848. That's a very crucial date, 1848. So he says that in 1848, Muhammad Shah's reign came to an end. I'm now quoting, yes? And my grandfather settled peaceably in Bombay and there established his darkhana or headquarters. Then he continues, not only was this a wise and happy personal decision, but it had an admirable effect on the religious and communal life of the whole Ismaili world. Now, the key sentence. It was as if the heavy load of persecution and fanatical hostility which they had to bear for so long was lifted. I'm going to repeat that sentence. It was as if the heavy load of persecution and fanatical hostility which they had to bear for so long. So what is he saying? He's saying that it is only since 1848, half the century, about 50 years, 52 years, then the whole century, 152 years, and now 21 years. 170 odd years now. It's only for the last 170 years that the Ismaili Jamaat has been able to breathe. To breathe. Do you understand the importance of what I repeated twice, that sentence. So from 622, if you like, when the Hijra started of the Holy Prophet, to 1848, the Ismaili community had only suffered persecution and fanatical hostility. And so we shouldn't be surprised if something like 20 of our imams were martyred. Look, Maulana Ali, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein were martyred within 25 years of the Prophet's passing. It's not a happy history, huh? It's a tortuous, it's a very painful history. And I think we Ismailis are very ungrateful that we don't bother to find out and then understand how grateful we should be for the present position of the Jamaat. Mm? Very painful history. So in this painful history, which starts in Makkah and Medina, yes, although Maulana Ali was not just there. Maulana Ali's headquarters was actually Kufa in Iraq. So we are really talking in generalized terms, okay, when we say there's the Arabian period. In the Arabian period, we have the Imams who were there, Maulana Ali, partly, Maulana Hussein, Maulana Zain al-Abidin. And in my other group, I have done a very beautiful poem that was written about Maulana Zain al-Abidin, who kept a completely low profile. He didn't participate in the politics of Islam at all. Rosmin can perhaps circulate that or send a link. It's a poem by a poet called Farazdak about Maulana Zain al-Abidin. It will bring tears. If you understand the meaning, it will bring tears to your eyes. Then Maulana Muhammad al-Baqir and Maulana Jafar Sadiq. This is called the Arabian period because they were still in Arabia. So, what happened at Maulana Jafar Sadiq's time? Yeah, I think most of you will know that, but I don't know if you will be able to express it in the way I feel it should be expressed. I'd like to discuss this point a little bit more here. Normally, and you can disagree with me if you have seen it reported in a different way, normally I have seen both Ismaili and other scholars, they all write like this. They say that after Maulana Jafar Sadiq, that is the next Imam Maulana Ismail, there's a controversy, right? That some people say that he had done Nas on him and then he withdrew it, which is such a funny thing to say about the Imam's Nas. Yeah? Once a Nas is made, it's made. It's never withdrawn. That's an Ismaili point of view. Anyway, they say that etc. happened, and we broke away from the others. You know, this is really, really wrong language. We Ismailis have not broken away from others. Others have chosen to follow a different imam. So even how you express these things, particularly in writing, it really makes my blood pressure go up when I hear things like that from our Jamaat. Because, you know, they do not read Ismaili materials. They read other people's materials. And the proof is in the eating of the pudding. Because ours is the only line which still continues. So we haven't broken away from anybody. Others have broken away from us. I don't want to even use negative language like they have broken away. You can say they went their own way. They chose their own imam. Yeah? But be careful because you will read this even in Ismaili articles written by Ismailis. And please be a bit more discerning, you know. If you are acquiring knowledge, use that knowledge to be more alert and to discern whether people are giving you the right information in the right expression. So yes, at the time of Maulana Ismail, There is a huge controversy, but we Ismailis believe that the true Nas was done on Maulana Muhammad ibn Ismail. But his own half-brother, right, said that Musa Kazim, he claimed the imamate, and a very large number of people followed him. Okay? So this is a very troubled time for the imams, very, very troubling. For, on the one hand, there's all the enmity of the Umayyads and the Abbasids, and on the other, within the family and the community, this thing happens. And people say, oh, but they were half-brothers, they were the same family. And you have to point out again and again to people that Qabil was also a brother of Habil. You have to point out that Kan'an was a son of a prophet, but he disobeyed. So it's not a guarantee that if you are born in the family of a prophet or an imam, that you are going to be on Sirat al-Mustaqim. Keep that in mind. It's our choice to follow the rightful imam or not. That's your choice. So from that time, Maulana Muhammad ibn Ismail's time, that begins our Maulana Ismail and his son, begins what is called the Syrian period. So the imams, they went off to Syria, you know, and Fakir and I have been to Syria. And this is called Ador-e-Satar, again, because the imams, you know, were practicing taqiyya, precautionary secrecy, right? I have also seen by the word taqiyya, you know, the Jamaat has said, the imams were hiding. What a silly word to use for imams. You know, this is, they are manifest imams. They are not hiding. They are practicing precautionary secrecy to save their lives from their enemies. So there are all these people out there ready to blow out the light of imamah. You all know about how miraculous it is that Yazid and his army, they killed every single male who had accompanied Maulana Hussein. How did 14 years old Maulana Zainul Abidin escape? Hazrat Zainab protected him, the sister, his aunt, the sister of Maulana Hussein. She didn't let them do anything to him. And in fact, she and he were imprisoned in Damascus. And when Hazrat Zainab gave that amazing speech using the Quran in the court of Yazid, everybody was silent. See? Right, so now we come to the Syrian period. So Fakir and I have been to a masjid, which is not in the hands of Ismailis now. It's in the hands of our other brothers and sisters. And there is an opening in the floor, which is covered by carpets. But the caretaker will show you. He'll show you that there is a tunnel starting from this masjid. And this tunnel goes many, many miles out into the desert. So the imams had to have escape routes, because the enemies were always, always spying and following them. Right? It was not an easy history. That's why I read out that one single sentence of Maulana Sultan Washa twice. And in this time, those devoted and faithful Ismailis and Dais, think of their sacrifices in protecting the Imam and at the same time carrying out the Ismaili da'wah. They must have been really amazing people, huh? So the Syrian period is Maulana Ismail, Maulana Muhammad ibn Ismail, Maulana Wafi Ahmad, Maulana Taqi Muhammad, and Maulana Razi bin Abdullah. Total low profile, taqiyya, right? And then the Dais were doing their good work in places like North Africa, yeah? And this is the beginning of the North African and the Egyptian period when Maulana Mahdi went to North Africa after the Dais had worked on the Berber tribe and had converted them, right? And made them strong supporters. And apparently, there is a hadith of the Holy Prophet Muhammad about this. The Ismailis believe in this hadith very strongly, that the Holy Prophet said that 300 years after me, the sun will rise in the west. You know that the sun does not rise in the west, right? It rises in the west and sets in the west. So what is it? It's a hadith that requires finding its inner meaning. And this inner meaning is that around 300 years after the Holy Prophet, Maulana Mahdi rose in North Africa, and that was the beginning of the Fatimid Empire. Okay? So Maulana Mahdi, Maulana Qaim bi Amrillah, Maulana Mansur, Maulana Mu'iz, Maulana Aziz, Maulana Hatim bi Amrillah, Maulana Zahir, Maulana Zahir, and Maulana Mustansir Billah the first. Okay. And I think we hear a lot about the Fatimid Empire, right? Because from North Africa, the Fatimid Imams, they sent Ghazi Johar to Cairo, to Fustat in Egypt, and then from Fustat, it was a bloodless conquest of Egypt. There was no resistance. They were very happy to receive the new administration. And it was our imams who established the new city of Kahira. And that was, it was in the time of Maulana Mu'iz that it went there. And so Maulana Mu'iz is the one who would have established the city of Kahira. And Maulana Aziz is the one who established the University of Al-Azhar in Cairo. Right? Now, I'm going to ask you, I think you may have already heard, because there are several seminars and several publications, right? And yes, we have to be very proud of the Fatimid Empire, because, you know, the Ismailis themselves were a minority in the empire. The rest were the majority. And there were Christians, Coptic Christians, there were Jews, there were all other communities there. And our imams had a policy of pluralism and meritocracy. People were employed on the strength of their qualification, not because they were Ismaili. So there were many, many things about the Fatimid Empire which are absolutely mind-blowing. And everybody is talking about that. But sometimes there are tendencies to look at the past always as the golden age. But in the Ismaili tariqa, the golden age is always in the future. So to give you one little example, I have heard people say, oh, the Fatimids established a university. And I agree, it's still there. It's still there. It's not in Ismaili control, but it's still there. Al-Azhar, the mosque and the university are there. World Heritage Site, okay? But the point is that 1,000 years later, in the time of Shah Karim al-Husseini Hazar Imam, what does he do? He establishes international universities. The Aga Khan University is an international university. He establishes the University of Central Asia, which is through collaboration of three different countries. And it too has international aspect. And he establishes Aga Khan academies, which are like universities, mini universities. Each Aga Khan academy is like a mini university. So in the present time, the Imam has established at least three, I would say, universities. So we should have a balanced view of things, right? Not be carried away by other people's talks, I think, yeah? Okay, now, from Maulana Mustansir Billah the first, you know, this Fatimid Empire, which was so successful in everywhere, civilizationally, culture, you know, architecture, science, art, everything had developed amazingly because of this Fatimid Empire and its policies, right? And the Ismaili Dawa, the first wave of it, had gone via Yemen to Sindh, yeah? This is Satgur Nur's period. So you can see the reach. In the Mediterranean, the Fatimid navy was the best. And the Fatimid influence was as far as Sicily and other islands around Italy. But at the same time, with all the success, there was tremendous enmity, tremendous opposition from the Abbasids. Again, the Abbasids are not strangers. They are also from the family of the Prophet. And what have the Abbasids done? They spent millions on writing books, huge books, in which they tried to disprove the genealogy of our Imam. They wrote lots and lots of books against our Imam. And, you know, those still exist, and those may be read by people who know Arabic. So that was the downside of having a very successful cosmopolitan, very high civilization empire. But, you know, one should also remember that in the memoirs, Maulana Sultan Shah says that the Holy Prophet had two roles. One of those was his essential role. His essential role was that he was a prophet. But his accidental role was that he became the head of the state of Medina. And so our imams may have been caliphs, also worldly caliphs, in the time of the Fatimid Empire. That's good. It's history. We should know about it, yeah? But that is not their essential role. But while they were doing the accidental role, look at what a wonderful prototype, what a wonderful example they set. Okay. Now, whenever there is success, there is also within it, if you like, opposition. And what happens is that when Maulana Muslim Sabila the first passes, these wazirs interfere. They are not Ismailis, but their daughter is married to the half-brother of Maulana Nizar, and so they back him as the next imam. And Maulana Nizar and his sons have to leave Egypt. And what we say now, and this will be new for you now, okay, is that the Fatimid Empire continued under the Musa Ali Bohras, Musa Alavians, but the Ismaili Fatimid Empire moved to Al-Mut. And I think that you all know about a little bit more about the Al-Mut period as well. That this is Maulana Nizar, Maulana Hadi, Maulana Muhtadi, Maulana Kahir, Maulana Allah Zikri Salam, Maulana Allah Muhammad, Maulana Jalaluddin Hassan, Maulana Alaidin Muhammad, Maulana Rukhnuddin Khairishah, Maulana Shamsuddin Muhammad. These are all around the Al-Mut area. And the Al-Mut period is the beginning of the 7 centuries in which our imams lived in Iran. And they didn't live in one place, you know. If you listen carefully to the Ginnards even, you'll hear things like, names like Kahak and Kirman and Mahalat and all sorts of other places, you know. Deila Madesh, and these words are also in our Ginnans, if you pay attention and know what the Ginnans are talking about. Yeah? So we have the Al-Mut period, which is in Iran, and then the Central Iranian period, in which we have all the Imams, Maulana Qasim Shah Islam Shah, Maulana Muhammad ibn Islam Shah, Maulana Muslim Sirbillah II. Yeah? And it is in the time of Maulana Muhammad ibn Islam Shah that Pir Sadruddin goes to India, right? And Maulana Garib Mirza Maulana. It's a very long list of imams right up to the time of Maulana Agha Hassan Ali Shah. I just talked about the what I call the Central Iranian period, but keep in mind that Alamut is also Iran. 700 years. And you can see the impact of that, right? You can see that we use a lot of Persian words. So, for instance, we say, Hayyu Zinda, when we enter Jamakana. Hay is Arabic, Zinda is Farsi, but it means the same, living. And then whoever is there replies, Kayyum Painda. I know the word Painda has now deteriorated into Paya, yeah, to be differentiated from the dish. So, Kayyum Painda. Kayyum means ever-living in Arabic, and Painda is Farsi, it means the same. Then we have this phrase, Pirsha. Pir is a Farsi word. We have many, many Persian words in our vocabulary in the Ismaili. Okay? And then the final period we call, not the final period, sorry, the period from Maulana Agha Hassan Ali Shah, who very, very, very traumatic history, the way Maulana Khalilullah Ali, his father, was martyred in Yazd, in Iran. And all those events, right, led to him migrating, exiling himself from Iran and going to And then the Indian period is Maulana Agha Hassan Ali Shah, Maulana Ali Shah, and partly Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah. And then Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah moves his headquarters to southern France. And Hazri Imam moves to Paris, and now they go to the, the name has gone out of my head, the Imamate office in Lisbon as well. So this is the European period, and who knows where the future imams will take the Jama'at. So that is a very, very like a thumbnail sketch, right? But a thumbnail sketch, nevertheless, where you should remember Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah's words of persecution and fanatical hostility. That's very important. Okay, I have finished what was on the topic, an overview of our line of imamat, which we recite in our dua presently. Okay, thank you all for your attention. I know that was a quite a heavy session. It was for me as well.